Good morning. Today we are looking at Chapter 18, The Infinite Way. And he begins with, "The Infinite Way has two fundamental points, which are basic to its teaching. One is the nature of God as individual being, which means God as your being. Unless we catch this idea of oneness, we miss this basic spiritual premise that there are not both God and you. The only way we can realize oneness is to understand God as you. That is the first point in the teaching of the Infinite Way. The life which is God is your individual life. Therefore, your life is just as immortal as the life we call God. That is the reason I am always so positive about saying that no one in the world has ever died or passed on at any time in the history of the world. If he had, he would have had a life of his own to lose, to give up. But God is life. God is life eternal, and God is one. Therefore, life is one, and that means your life and mind." All right, so we often read or hear or remember, "I and my Father are one." But that one life is invisible. You can't see it with your eyes by looking in the mirror. The life which is God, which is your individual life, is invisible. And so you can't see it with your eyes, you can't hear it with your ears, but you can feel it intuitively or spiritually discerning. You can feel your invisible life, which is God. All right, so that's important to establish that. My life is invisible. It's hid with Christ in God. Old theological beliefs have instilled in most of us a sense of duality. All those who were not born into some metaphysical movement or other, and all those who have any kind of church background, have been taught to look up to a God in heaven to be worshipped, or to think of God as something separate and apart from their own being. Of course, to all these people, it is almost sacrilegious to say that I and the Father are one. Yes, when Jesus said it, they took up rocks to stone him, because he made himself equal with God. And that's what we have to do, make ourselves equal with God. Now, that doesn't mean walking around thinking, "I'm God, so I'm going to control the universe," or "I'm God, so I'm going to control this marriage," or "I'm going to control these kids." No. But it does mean that I am God. The invisible I that I am is God. And that's what we need to do to practice the principles of the Infinite Way, is to know that I and the Father are one. The Father within me, not a far off God, but a Father within me, the kingdom of God is within you. Remember the meaning of within as used in this context. It does not mean like ink in a fountain pen or water in a glass. It really means that God is the life, the mind, the substance, the spirit, the soul of your being, yes, even the substance of your body. Now, again, we are walking in the invisible self, the invisible Christ self, but with these eyes we see a reflection in the mirror, 5 foot so or 6 foot so. And that's not God. God is the invisible part of us. No, that's not right either, because it's not a part. It's the totality of us. The invisible totality of us. So the question comes up, how can that be? Such a question is raised, of course, only because we are thinking of God in an orthodox way. If we were to understand God as consciousness, then there would no longer be a question of duality. We are consciousness. We know that all there is to us is consciousness. If I have a body at all, it must be because of consciousness. If I am conscious at all that there is a universe, I can only know it through the consciousness which I am. This is not a consciousness which I have, since in that case there would be an I and a consciousness. If that were true, there would be that separation again. The consciousness which I am rightly describes it. I am a state of consciousness. As consciousness, I am conscious of myself, of my individuality, of my being, of my body, of my business, of my home, of my universe. Except as consciousness, I could not be conscious of them. Either each of us has a consciousness of his own, or there is one consciousness which is manifested as individual being. That is the explanation of oneness as taught in The Infinite Way. And it is the same explanation given by Jesus Christ and by every great master who caught the vision of oneness. If you are seeking God, if you are seeking truth, if you are seeking good in any form, if you are praying for anything, you can know that you are deviating from the teaching of oneness. You are off the beam. There is only one way of knowing that you are on the beam, standing in oneness, and that is when you can say, I already am. All that the Father hath is mine. All that God is, I am. Only when you make an acknowledgement of your present infinity, of your present identity as one with the Father, only then can you know that you are following this teaching. If you have a desire, if you have an awareness of lack or limitation, there is only one way to meet it. Get back on the beam of recognition that all that the Father hath is mine, all that God is, I am. So that's the first point of the Infinite Way, which is the nature of God. The nature of God is individual being. Consciousness is infinite. There is one consciousness. It is infinite consciousness. It is God consciousness. And that's what I am. And that's what you are. Now, I know if I say the word being, you probably do not have an explanation for that. You don't have a little box you can put that in. Being. But the truth is, God is individual being. But God is infinite individual being. And so God is individual being omnipresent. Only when you make an acknowledgement of your present infinity, of your present infinity as one with the Father, only then can you know that you are following the infinite way. If you have a desire or an awareness of lack or sense of limitation, there's only one way to meet it. All that the Father hath is mine, all that God is, I am. So that's the first point, the nature of God. The second point in the message of the infinite way is the nature of error. Throughout all my writings, you will find chapters on the nature of error. In this work, there is only one error, which we call hypnotism, suggestion, or an appearance. We can handle the entire human scene by calling it hypnotism, since it is a suggestion that is being presented to our five senses, a suggestion that to our senses is an entity or identity. If in treatment in the healing work you were to recognize quickly that any phase of limitation or sin, discord or disease, any phase of insufficiency is a suggestion, then you would have a quick healing, since the nature of error is illusion. It does not exist as reality. When you grasp these two points of the Infinite Way message, the rest of it is not too difficult. The trouble has been that for thousands of years, we have accepted the universal belief of a selfhood apart from God. God's in his heaven, and here is little Bill down on earth, or little Susan down on earth, or little Mark. Now we are training ourselves to acknowledge ourselves as the very presence of God, as God made manifest, or the Word made flesh. Okay, so you are the Word made flesh, and there is no reality to disease. You do not have to find a cause for it, and you do not have to find a remedy for it. You merely have to recognize its nature as a non-existent illusion or suggestion. The world needs to agree on the basic principle: I and my Father are one. All that God is, I am. All that the Father hath is mine. This is oneness, the single I, non-duality. Then we must come to an agreement that error of any nature, regardless of its form, whether sin, disease, fear, lack, limitation, or war, like the war we have going on in Iran right now, it represents only a false and finite concept of the world as it is. So we're looking at our TV screen and we're seeing rockets and missiles and bombs and all the carnage that goes with war, but we're not seeing the world as it is. Because the world as it is invisible. And your life is invisible. And God is invisible. So we'd better get used to working with the invisible and in the invisible. In 1932, Joel says, I discovered that all metaphysical books were wrong, which state that error is in our thought, and that we must search our thought to find out what it is. error is not in our thought. Error is in the universal thought, and we merely accept it. One person accepts it in the form of sin, one person accepts it in the form of disease, one in the form of lack and limitation. But in whatever form, it is a universal belief. What is the basis of a successful practice? There are just three things. First, I and my Father are one, regardless of his appearance, his background, or his sins. Every person is God made manifest. That's the first point. The second point is that all error, regardless of its name or nature, is merely a false sense of the real. All error is impersonal. Error is no more personal than good is. Never forget this, in case you are ever inclined or tempted to think that some individual is good. No one in the history of the world has been or is what we call good. The greatest master of them all said, "Why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, and that is God." So give credit where credit belongs. You are but the vehicle for the good of God. And that's the second point. The third point is that all error and all good are universal. No matter who the sinner is or what the sin is, do not accept the sin as his. Satan, evil, error are as impersonal in any individual as good was impersonal in the Master or anyone else who has ever been incarnated. That is one of the sins, glorifying people. How can we glorify people when we know that all the good there is in the world is the universal good, and that everyone can be an avenue for that universal good? It is a matter of opening consciousness and letting it flow out into expression. And that is all. That is all. Easy. Simple. A treatment is a statement or declaration of truth. And for that reason, I do not call it prayer. Prayer is that which takes place after the treatment has been given. And the truth about God and the nature of individual error has been stated. As one sits in a receptive and responsive mood, suddenly he feels the click announcing the presence of God. That is prayer. So, prayer is not the treatment. You start out with treatment. Maybe you start out with a scripture. Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. And you take that into your being, and you rehearse it within yourself until you come to an end of that, and you're sitting still, you're listening, you're receptive, and then there's a release. A release. If something falls off your shoulders, the responsibility, the work, the job, the responsibility falls off your shoulders. Thank you, Father. I know that God is here because I feel its presence. Thank you, Father. That is prayer. Prayer comes only when you are silent and are not voicing truth at all. When you are not thinking truth, you're not stating truth or declaring truth. Why do we ever state the truth, affirm the truth, or declare the truth, or give a treatment? The reason is that this reminder of the truth of being lifts us higher in consciousness to where, in a degree, we can overcome the fear of the condition. Actually, what we have done is to reveal so much truth within our own being that we have lost a great deal of the fear of the condition, and at last we can sit quietly and pray. Prayer is listening for that still small voice, and prayer is communion. Prayer is the ability to receive from the infinity of our own being, which is God. And when we do that, the presence of God announces itself. That presence of God, that Christ, and that does the work. Again, that does the work is something that is invisible. And so, this presence of God, which announces itself, is invisible. And that invisible is what does the work. So we'd better get comfortable with walking in and perceiving and resting in the invisible. That is really what heals. The treatment does not heal anything. It just lifts us to a state of consciousness where we can be receptive to spiritual truth. Receptive means to receive. Yes, as many as received, to them gave he power to become the sons of God. Receive from where? From God, who is the very center of our being. It is from the infinite source within that we feel that peace, be still. Or we hear, knowest thou not that I am with thee? I am ever with thee. Or if we do not hear a thing, if we just feel that great warm glow within, or that click, or that deep breath, that too is all right. That is the presence of God, the Christ announcing itself, and it, which is invisible, it does the work. You cannot heal anything with an effect. Therefore, in a treatment, never use the words which you have heard or read. But if you can catch these three main points and then voice them in your own words in an original way, if you can find some way of thinking about oneness without using as illustrations Lake Erie and Niagara Falls, or the sun and the sunbeams, or the waves and the ocean, then it will be that much more powerful for you. Those three examples make the idea of oneness very clear. This I know, because for many years I have seen the effects. I have seen the work that has been done in the world through a recognition of the truth found in these examples. But I can promise you that the work will be even more effective for you when you can find illustrations which are original with you. Again, it is said that spirit is like the wind. You hear the sound thereof, but you do not know where it came from or whither it's going. And again, when you hear the sound thereof or you feel that inner wind, that is the invisible Christ. That is the invisible you. That is the invisible God. All right. I have watched how people have lost their fear of sin and fear of disease, of alcoholism, of drugs, the moment they have caught the meaning of the illustration of the white poodle, Do you remember the illustration of the white poodle? There's a man on stage and he calls up a volunteer from the audience and he hypnotizes them. And he says, look out for that white poodle. In fact, catch that white poodle, would you? And the person gets up and chases all over the stage and there's no white poodle. And you know it because you're in the audience and you're not hypnotized. And so when you see a disease or a lack or a limitation, you are seeing the white poodle that's not there. Again, the world is perfect, made in the image and likeness of God. But we don't see that invisible, perfect world. We see the visible, which is a series of concepts. Joel says, in my younger days, in New York City, there was a vaudeville act in which a hypnotist told the people he hypnotized, now you see that white poodle down there? We don't want it on the stage. Chase it off and into the wings. With that suggestion, the subject made a great effort to get the dog off the stage and into the wings, and in most cases, with a little shoving, they succeeded. The white poodle has done great things for me. It has been a very helpful illustration. I remember one day I had a patient in the office to whom I was trying unsuccessfully to explain the illusory nature of error. I was not succeeding very well. Suddenly the vaudeville hypnotist came back to my thought, and after telling him about his act, I said to the patient, now suppose we had a man up there on the stage who just couldn't get that poodle off the stage and into the wings. It just wouldn't go. Suppose this hypnotized man looked out into the audience, saw one of his metaphysical friends, and called to him. Can you help me? Give me a treatment to get rid of my white poodle. Now what form would such a treatment take? It would be just a laugh, wouldn't it? A smile. Thank you, Father. There is no white poodle. That is the nature of error. It does not exist. It is not there. It is a state of hypnotism. We know that because of all our years of healing so-called incurable diseases, there is not a form of disease that it is not possible to heal in this work. In our realization of truth, we know that error exists only as a white poodle, a non-existent white poodle, or a state of hypnosis. And the healing agency is the realization that we are dealing not with a white poodle, but with hypnosis. Try this when you are called upon to heal anything. Immediately see if you cannot say to yourself, no, I'm not going to try to get rid of the white poodle, a non-existent white poodle, or a state of hypnosis. Because there is no white poodle. There is nothing here but hypnotism. Stand on that. Stand on it. And see if you will not have some wonderful healings. Prove in your healing work that there is no disease, that everything that appears to you as disease is a state of hypnotism. If you can do that once, you will have proved the principle. And from then on, it is only the degree to which you can maintain this vision that will make you successful in this work. If we can go out and do this healing work through our understanding of this principle, then the whole world will come to us. No practitioner of spiritual healing has the right to be a practitioner unless he has received some measure of illumination that reveals to him the allness of God. Everybody will tell you that God is all, and that that is the secret, and it is. But unless you can see that the allness of God precludes the possibility of there being any reality to error, then you see you do not understand the meaning of the allness of God. You cannot have the allness of God and a disease. Do not fool yourself. It is an impossibility. Now here's an interesting line. Meditation is not a necessity. Now he has put out there that we need to meditate 12 times a day, and sometimes he says 30 times a day, until we feel this click, this presence, this release. But here he says meditation is not a necessity. If you think that meditation is a necessity, then you are making a god out of meditation. Meditation is just an avenue, a vehicle, which helps us to arrive at the place where we hear these revelations and unfoldments of truth, and where we are able to feel the presence of God. But if after we made the contact we could not meditate, we might get along just as well, have just as many healings, and have just as satisfying a life. Nothing is necessary to our experience in the realm of effect, not even meditation, not even treatment. If you could not give yourself a treatment, you still could be healed. If you were knocked unconscious this second, you would be healed, even without a treatment, or anyone's giving you a treatment. Why? You are living in the consciousness of God's allness, and that acts as a treatment, whether you are conscious or unconscious, whether you are awake or asleep. That is why I continue to refer to the injunction to pray without ceasing. If you are praying, if you are knowing this truth all the time, it does not make any difference then whether you give a treatment at this particular moment or at another moment. You are always living in your treatment. You do not have to declare it over and over again. If 12 people came into your office in 1 or 2 or 3 hours, you would not have to stop 12 times to give each one of them a treatment. The fact that you are living in your treatment is the treatment. All there is to this situation is God, and any other appearance is a suggestion of a white poodle. Or you may think of it as a snake in the rope, except that there is no snake in the rope. It's a rope. If one thinks quickly of either of these illustrations, the treatment is complete right there and then. That is treatment. But it is not the kind of treatment that many metaphysicians call treatment. In other words, it is not sitting down and rehearsing a great many statements of truth, affirming this and denying that, and then saying that God hooks up broken bones and knits them together, or some other kind of wishful thinking. While it is true that many of those things constitute treatment, the highest form of treatment is when, after having learned all that, you do not have to rehearse it anymore, but just sum it all up in one sentence. Well, that must be the white poodle. In other words, you are saying that is just a hypnotic suggestion, just a mesmerism. Then snap your fingers at it. However, I do not advise anyone to give that one sentence kind of treatment until he knows the substance that belongs in a treatment. All right, so you must have the conscious awareness of this invisible thing called self, called God, called Christ, called presence. If you have the conscious awareness of presence, your part is done. Your treatment is over. Now rest back and allow that Christ to come forth. You must come to that place where you can say to yourself, well, if there is any error, it is simply the hypnotic suggestion of a white poodle. Now, I am not going to give a treatment to get rid of that white poodle that I know does not exist. Neither am I going to give a treatment for the fleas on the white poodle. Yes, even fleas, because after you have a white poodle, you might just as well take all that goes with it. After you have accepted man as mortal, you have birth, you have accident, you have sin, fear, you have disease, you have change of life, you have old age, decomposition, insanity, and you have death. But mortal man is non-existent, so why give a treatment for any kind of mortal man or any part of his body? If you do away with mortal man himself, then you have nothing left to treat. It is profound, and yet it is the simplest of truths. Now, mortal man is what? Visible. Mortal man is visible. But what about that Son of God, to which God says, all that I have is thine? You would have to agree God is invisible. And so that immortal man is also invisible. We really have to learn to walk in the invisible, move in the invisible, treat in the invisible, know the invisible, feel the invisible. Because when you feel it, you are at home, in heaven, within. Let us consider the term reflection. The fire that we see at the center of the diamond comes through each facet of the diamond. We might say that the facets reflect the fire that is within. Actually, the fire of a diamond is as much a part of the diamond as the facets. We, however, refer to the facets of the diamond as reflectors of the fire within. In the same way, it is true that God is infinite substance, and that that substance is formed as the one body. But remember this, there is only one mind and only one body. That one mind and one body express individually as you and as me. Reflection is a term that is sometimes used to indicate the fact that body is individual in the sense of being your body or my body. We say that your body or my body is the body of God, the infinite body, infinitely expressed, infinitely reflected. There is only one body in the same way in which there is only one diamond. The diamond may have 100 different facets, but the diamond and the fire are one. There are not 100 diamonds, there is only one. All the fire, all the brilliance of the diamond, however, is reflected in each and every facet, because there is no place where those facets can be separated or divided from each other. They are all one. Using the word reflection, not in the sense of a reflection in the mirror, but in the sense that I reflect integrity, loyalty, honesty, or fidelity, is not really incorrect. However, such a statement is not true. As expressed by the Master in the spiritual language of the Bible, the correct statement is, I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. We could in the same way say, I am integrity, loyalty, honesty, or fidelity. But to state this truth in that way would not be very intelligible to the world, and so we say, I express integrity, or loyalty, or fidelity, or I reflect it. The truth is that I am really not reflecting it at all. It is really a constituted part of my being and of yours. It is all one. Now, Joel says, let me caution you not to be too much concerned about the use of words. Words are designed to convey ideas, but it is difficult to express spiritual truth in human language. It was the great spiritual teacher Lao Tse who said, in effect, if you can name it, it is not God. If you can define it, it is not God. And that is true. Nothing you can know about God is God, since the knower of the truth is God. Yet we go right on teaching what God is, although actually it is impossible to teach what God is, since I am. But that same I am is you when you are saying I am. In the final analysis, all that can ever be known about God is that I am. That is the basic truth. Always the knower, the one who is knowing the truth, is the truth that is being known. But to convey this truth through words presents difficulties. The use of the word transparency is also open to misinterpretation. Ordinarily, when we think of the word transparency, we think of a clean pane of glass letting the sun shine through. And we call that glass a clear transparency for the sun. If the glass is dirty, we say it's a poor transparency. If I were to speak of myself as a transparency for God and mean it in that sense, I would be wrong, because the sun and the pane of glass are not two separate things. But God and I are not two separate things, and therefore, in that sense, I would not be a transparency for God. You remember Jesus' statement, why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, and that is God. In that sense, Jesus was the clear transparency through which the goodness of God was shown forth in the world. As with any form, words have their limitations. That is the reason that the deepest teaching is without words and without thoughts. God is the reality of being, the sum total of the reality of being. The individual I is that place at which the totality of God is made evident to you and as you. In that sense, God, the reality, which is my incorporeal, invisible being, appears outwardly to you as what you call intelligence, integrity, loyalty, fidelity, gratefulness, appreciation, cooperation. In that sense, I am a transparency through which that light of God being is flowing. If you use the word transparency in the sense of there being a God and an I, and God pouring through, you would be wrong. But if you can see integrity, spirituality, intelligence, and love as qualities of God, and then if you say, my, what a wonderful transparency for good that individual is, you do not have two-ness, any more than you have two when you are expressing faithfulness or fidelity. There are not two of you, you and fidelity. Fidelity is actually a quality of your character, of your nature. It is ingrained, it is inherent in you. It constitutes your being. It is not wrong to say, "My, you are a wonderful transparency for truth," because that does not mean that truth is something that is separate from you, showing through. It is not wrong to say you're a wonderful transparency. Showing through, it means that you are a visible evidence of an invisible quality. With enough of the light of truth, we shall be at the place where, regardless of any phase of error which we meet, we can just snap our fingers and say, "Shoo." And think of the white poodle. Then we shall be a transparency for the truth of being, that we will heal automatically. We will be such a transparency, we will heal automatically. Watch this. If for any length of time you can maintain that state of consciousness in which you do not take in any phase or any appearance of error, but instantly recognize, "I do not have to give a treatment to a non-existent poodle," you will be doing wonderful healing work. You might say, "Well, will I heal all my own ills?" I do not know. It still seems necessary for us to help each other. Of course, with this realization, many things will clear up for us, and with the gradual unfolding of consciousness, they will all clear up. But with problems that are particularly annoying, we still seem to have to call on each other and borrow each other's light for a little while. Someday, by living in this consciousness continually, so that we never indulge in gossip, hearsay, or false rumors, and never accept appearances as reality, we shall come to the place where our own flesh will completely disappear. You hear that? Let's read that again. Someday, by living in this consciousness, our own flesh will completely disappear. Now, I took a ride with Herb Fitch over in Hawaii when I was visiting at his house, and we went to the post office to get the mail. And on the way, Herb talked about going to the post office a few days before that, and he looked down and his legs were gone. Kind of hard to drive without legs, but there he was, no legs, on the way to the post office. So that's what is meant here. Our own flesh will completely disappear. Now, I've had that experience in meditation, where I looked and I could not see my body. I saw presence everywhere. Just as the Master cautioned some of his followers to tell no man what things they had seen, so I, Joel, caution you not to speak about this. Do not speak of it to anyone for weeks or months to come. Take it into your consciousness, practice it, train yourself in it, which is what I call learning to walk in the invisible. You now know what the principle is. You have only to look out and smile at the white poodle that does not exist, and you will have the sum total of the practice of this truth. But it must be practiced. Develop this consciousness of not loving, hating, or fearing error of any name or nature. Keep this inside your own being. Work with it every time you are confronted with error, whether it is yours or that of some friend, a patient, or a relative. Do not tell him what you are doing. take it into the silence of your own being. Now, silence and invisibility are closely linked, because when you're declaring truth within yourself, I and my Father are one, all that the Father has is mine, I am ever with thee, even unto the end of the world. While you're declaring all that truth, you're still an individual declaring truth about God and truth about error. Now, there is no truth about error other than there is no error. So again, you are turning error into something invisible, not there. And so we learn to live and move and have our being in the invisible, because that's our real self. The Christ child was taken down into Egypt and kept there for a time. Let us take our Christ into Egypt. Let us take our truth into the deep silence, into the secret place of the Most High, and let us keep it there. Now, when you are silent and you are in the silence, you are in the invisible. And that is where Christ's presence can announce itself and reveal itself to you. Because Christ is invisible. And if you would know Christ, you must be invisible. Remember what I am telling you now. You are dealing with the principle which the world would ridicule it if it heard it. So, do not tell this thing. It is so simple that you will demonstrate it beautifully, simply, and easily. And the world will wonder, what is it that you are doing? After you have proved this, it is all right to talk about it, but not until it is really a part of your being. So that chapter appeared to be easy, simple, but having entered the consciousness of the invisible, we see no, it's not a simple chapter at all. It's very deep, very, very deep. So if you remember nothing at all, if you remember only one thing, remember that we need to learn to walk in the invisible. The secret place of the Most High is within you. It is your very being at the center, and it is invisible. And so if you would commune with the invisible presence of God, you must also be invisible. You must also be invisible presence. Okay, so we've come to the end of this chapter, and we are ready to go forward practicing these principles. That was chapter 18. Next week will be chapter 19. Thank you for drawing this forth, for making this. I wasn't aware while I was reading this chapter how much it had to tell us to get back within ourselves into the invisible. But I became aware of it while reading it to you. And so I thank you for drawing this out, because it's your consciousness that draws this. Now, before we go, I want to put a world work suggestion to you. What I am doing is what the Master told me. He said to pray for your enemies. He didn't say anything about praying for your friends or relatives or your troops. And so I'm going to do what he suggested. Every evening at 7:30, I'm going to know the truth where the enemy appears to be. And I hope you will join me. It only needs to be 5-6 minutes. Longer if you feel led. We must know the truth which will set men free. And we can do it. I pray for my enemies, not that they overcome me, not that they overcome my nation. I pray for the enemy that they may awaken, that maybe this group of protesters will rise up and take control with the wisdom of God and with the grace of God and the actual people that are being oppressive. I pray for them to awaken also, that they may come to a place where they are able to say, we surrender. God's will be done. And not assume that they know God's will. Okay? So we'll know the truth at 7:30, starting today, Sunday, March 1st, and we'll just go on indefinitely until we see the light shining through. Thank you. God bless you. And thanks for being my friends. So be it.